Hi, everyone. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest, I have two wonderful guests. Two, not one, two. Kevin and Rex from the Sales Developers are here to talk to us today about a myriad of things. But first and foremost is my misconception of what they do. So it's really interesting when you look at this whole thing of awareness and understanding. When you look at a website or get an email from somebody and you're trying to piece together what is it that you do and where do you differentiate yourself, I think I missed the mark on this one. So they're going to set me straight and then set all of us straight on how functional they are in a number of different areas. So when I looked at their website, I thought they were outsourcers for business development. And I understand from Kevin and Rex that that's only one little portion, right?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we're a new company, you might say. We've been doing this for a long time separately and then finally came together as a team to build this company. So what we have as far as the website was, it was an exciting compilation of all of our ideas of what was happening at the time. And you've probably seen one version and somebody today would see a totally different version. So I'm not surprised you heard from that description online that we were outsourcing. So, Ryan Reisert and I, so the co-founder Ryan and I, we originally, a couple of years ago, we each had our own outsourced sales companies. So mm-hmm. to some degree, we were both outsourcing sales development, lead generation, that sort of thing. And so we've experienced what it's like to run one of those agencies. And when we came together after writing our book called Outbound Sales No Fluff, so we wrote a book together just kind of as friends in the space and compadres, people who understood what it was like to need to build outbound sales. Mm-hmm. We said, look, we don't want to build an outsourced sales agency again. We don't want to, struggle with the same kinds of mistakes and challenges that happen with a typical outsourcing operation. We don't want to be a black box where our clients don't have any clue what's happening. We even tried to solve this in our old companies, but where the clients don't really know what's happening, their expectations are totally different than what they're actually getting. And there's some real challenges with outsourcing. And in fact, we started the company, the whole goal was to give teams who want to build internal sales organizations a leg up on the competition by giving them the systems and processes and methodologies that are going to make them more successful, having more and better conversations with their ideal buyers. So it really came from the perspective of we don't want to outsource. Mm-hmm. Now, as we engaged with more early stage companies that were struggling to build their sales organization, their sales stack, all of these things, there were some cases where we realized, we're building this and they need support. They need somebody. They're not ready to hire just yet. They don't have the staffing available. They don't have the resources to do this. So we'll go ahead and continue the execution we've been doing to prove that the system works that we built for them. We'll just continue to execute on that. And eventually that became a more fully baked out, we call it SDR as a service offering. But the goal always being that the client gets all of the knowledge, sees all the reporting. I mean, just way more transparency than your typical outsource shop.
Okay. So if to encapsulate what you just said, you have been in the trenches developing the perfect process for clients in your former life. And I love what you said, because you said typical mistakes and challenges. I bet you people listening on this call do not know what those typical mistakes and challenges are. And they plop into an outsourced arrangement, not having really this checklist. So it sounds like you guys have not only the process, but a checklist of all the things one would need to do in order to be able to consider outsourcing. Because I come from the old school of, if you can't figure it out in-house, how the heck are you going to manage an outsourced entity who's going to do it for you?
Yeah.
But I know that you're coming to the table with experiences across a variety of business development platforms, business development, sales messaging systems, and different companies, mm-hmm. different verticals, different prospect personas, yada, yada, yada. So you have a lot more oomph in figuring out, let's take a little from here, a little from there, a little from there. It's like you're the master chef. So I totally get that. And that's why I cringe a little bit when I hear people start up to go outsource, but I also understand that if they can't get the FTEs, the full-time employees, or get that whole side of the HR thing figured out, then what you do is a very viable option to get the numbers one needs, especially if they're going for funding, additional rounds, to be able to say, hey, look at our dashboard, look at our ramp, look at how we are doing consistently and repeatedly so that we can scale, but we need money to do that.
Yeah. And we found that time and time again for early stage companies, again, I mean, this happens across even later stage companies that still kind of consider themselves a startup. Mm-hmm. There's this big gap between founder-led sales and a fully baked sales organization. And I wrote an article on LinkedIn a long time ago when I was just doing consulting individually about a lot of startup founders think that they can just put out this, hey, I've got this cool thing we're selling. We're really excited about it. I'm going to hire a sales rep for a low cost. They're going to come over and they're going to build the process and actually execute sales and train people in the future and manage a team. Like, they're trying to hire a VP or director of sales and they're willing to pay them an SDR salary. So that's the gap that we see all the time. So our goal here is really to say, look, you know, for founder-led sales teams or early stage sales teams, you don't really have the time and bandwidth and energy and knowledge to look at all the tools out there. I mean, the sales stack is growing at the same rate that the marketing tech stack grew. I mean, we're getting into the hundreds and eventually thousands of vendors in sales technologies. Yeah. I was, employee maybe number 350 at insidesales.com. So I really cut my teeth on sales acceleration technology early in my career. And I love it. I love what it can do, but there's just so many darn competitors out there nowadays. So it's hard as a founder or an early kind of sales leader to say, which technologies do I need to use? Well, I probably need to take a demo with six different vendors to see which one really fits our processes. And, oh, wait, what's our process? Oh, I don't actually know. We've sold a handful of accounts to a few friends and family and coworkers. there's all kinds of things that you have to figure out. So we try and provide the foundational elements, and whether the actual sales execution from an SDR, kind of top of funnel activity, happens in-house or with us, the knowledge and the learnings and the systems are all the same.
Okay. So Kevin, tell us about your background and how you fit into this puzzle of helping salespeople do more than just selling.
Yeah, good question. So I joined the sales developers because I lived all the pain points that we kind of solve. And I've been in a number of early stage startups and faced these same issues. So the number one experience that I pulled from that kind of helped me realize, man, Rex and Ryan really get it. And let me just say that I, you know, had the book, read their book, and had followed Rex and Ryan on LinkedIn for over a year before I joined the sales developers. So I'm kind of working with my heroes here in a way. I've loved the way that they think. I've followed all of their thought leadership and said, man, these guys are really doing it the right way. So I was part of a early stage startup that raised a Series A round of $12 million, and they had actually bootstrapped for a number of years. So the staff went from like 40 employees to 65 very, very quickly. So with the $12 million that they raised, they went and hired, you know, 15 SDRs. They said, hey, you know, we got all this venture financing, time for the hockey stick, right? And it does seem like this idea, like, okay, we're just going to raise a bunch of money and then throw a bunch of people at a sales problem. Within roughly about 12 months, they had hired and then fired / you know, laid off, let go, people left, about 30 salespeople. So I watched this all happen, and I was part of the wave of, you know, kind of getting laid off, and we were all in there trying to do our SDR work, getting good meetings, not getting enough meetings, meetings not converting. Mm-hmm. The bottom line, I watched what a startup with venture capital backing, I watched a startup with venture capital backing try and scale a sales team from the inside. And I saw the issue, and the real big issue, and what we work with all of our clients on, is the math of sales, right? So the math of sales doesn't lie. And Ryan, our CEO, is kind of the guy who created this awesome formula that we walk founders through to really show, okay, you need to understand how many, very granularly, how many activities lead to how many meetings lead to how much pipeline. Everybody has a sales target, but not enough people spend enough time working all the way backwards. So that's where the sales developers comes in, is we not only help you understand what your massive sales is, but we show you that you probably don't have a people problem. You probably have a process problem, and you're probably not doing enough of the right things enough times. And if you can focus granularly on those little things, whether it's phone calls, emails, LinkedIn connections, having the right messaging, it's all about earning more conversations and better conversations. And that's either going to help you go to market really quickly and have a lot of success, or it's going to help you iterate and find out really quickly, hey, this isn't working, right? Because our systems are designed to make any salesperson using them 4 to 5 times more effective than what they could do on their own. And that's based off of averages, industry averages. So that's why I joined the sales developers, and that's kind of the big problem that we're solving, helping people either figure out really quickly, this is going to work, or, hey, this is really working. And then they can add fuel to the fire, and we can help them do it with the outsource model, or we hand off the systems happily and kind of help them maintain them.
Okay. So, you know, this is not only for those listening, for startups or for founder-led. I work upmarket, usually bigger enterprises, and a lot of times I'm going into organizations that have the traditional legacy type of selling methodologies in place, and they're thinking, wow, we should probably start looking at lead generation, opportunity management, what have you. And we want to put this thing in and have no idea how to go about it. A lot of the reps have been there for a long time. They do all roles. So there's this whole issue of separation of roles. Do you guys believe in separation of roles, or do you think this could also work for the account executive that's out there that is also prospecting 20% of his time? Do you have models for both full and part-time prospecting?
Yeah, so I'll field this one because I'm a huge advocate for those account executives who want to be filling their funnel. They should be able to. But the average account executive is being forced to prospect based on a number that their sales manager is making up, right? So, okay, well, you've got to handle all inbound leads and you should probably be making 40 dials a day. There's just there's a number thrown out there and that's what they're expected to accomplish. At a 3% contact rate on average, they're probably happy in one conversation a day or fewer, right? Correct. If they're even doing their dials, if they're even sending their emails. I mean, there's all this work that they have to do, but the numbers are being set kind of at random. So what we advocate is using technology to add fuel to the fire, as Kevin said. So if you've already got a process that you know, hey, you know, we've got inbound leads maybe that are closing at a good clip. If we went outbound or if we started to accelerate the rate at which we contact those inbound leads using our full cycle reps, we believe that technology can help to simplify that and make it happen faster. So we use tools like we always share the tools that we use. We use Outreach, Connect and Sell. There's some other great tools that we are looking to partner with in the future. We use video as well, like GoVideo from Vidyard. But we use these technologies to accelerate the rate at which we can have those conversations. So for example, Connect and Sell, a sales rep who's got half an hour between meetings, well, he or she are probably, they're going to twiddle their thumbs, maybe prep for the meeting, go talk to a sales manager and say, hey, I'm really excited about this call. And then they're going to sit down and get on the call. But what we would advocate for, hey, in that half hour, use Connect and Sell or use our system that we build, including Connect and Sell, have five conversations, have 2-3 conversations with prospective buyers in between that time and make that half hour as effective as you possibly can be. So, you know, I think it's a huge win for full cycle sales reps. I love specialization because it allows people to improve on those skills. But if you can iterate at a fast enough clip as a full cycle rep, I think this also provides huge benefits to you as well.
I love the idea of, I call it on-demand prospecting, because for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And when I was in the call center, I managed a large call center of 250 agents that did outbound prospecting. When there was that idle time, we would fill that with learning material. So if they were sitting there idle, then would pop in, oh no, you're not going to sit here. You're going to learn something new, or if something for a client for compliance reasons. So I love the idea that you can just switch this on and while you're waiting, get 3 to 4 combos in a day. That would be so great for the folks that are in all roles because of the fact that they don't necessarily have this block time rhythm or habit. Yet they're getting there, but not quite. And it's difficult. And like you said, I was just at a conference last year where I almost cringed sitting in my seat when the sales managers got up there and said, it's all about 100 dials a day. I'm just like, where have you been? this is not
this whole
the case.
Time, the last 5 years. Sure.
You're right. So things have changed.
What was interesting about, the experiences I've had a situation where it was based off of my daily goals as a salesperson were based off of conversations. My manager said, you need 20 conversations a day. And I was like, wow, how am I going to get 20 conversations a day? And we weren't leveraging.
Kevin, you walk to a mall and you stop people and say, hey, I'd like to talk to you about this tool. There's no way to get 20, man. Not with the typical methods.
All right.
Oh, well, what we did was high velocity dialing, and they took away the chairs, so we had to stand up. So we were standing up.
No kidding.
Headsets on, and we were punching numbers all day, just dialing. And when you got 2 or 3 good conversations in a row and you have all this momentum, you had to go back and you had to get to 20. It was very interesting, but that's, once again, you know, we're using tools that make 20 conversations a day doable, but you're gonna have to spend a long time on ConnectIncel to get there. For anyone that's not familiar with ConnectIncel, it takes away all the pain and the hassle of actually dialing, of listening to gatekeepers. It's you put in a lead list, and they only connect you to the person when they find that lead. So if I'm trying to reach Mary Lou, it's only gonna connect me if it's Mary Lou on the line. So it's conversations on demand, and we're huge advocates for flipping that model, like you guys are saying. It's not about the number of dials. It's about the number of conversations and earning the conversations in the right channel at the right time in the right place, right? So that's why we don't just lean on only phones and we don't just set up email campaigns. It's all together, but then the message needs to be there as well. And messaging is something that Rex is a wizard at. Trust me. It's been really interesting working with Rex so far.
Well, and talking about the numbers again, Mary Lou, I don't know if you saw the recent report, the 2018 report from the Bridge Group. Did you have a chance to look at the kind of like the state of SDRs?
Not yet, no. But we quoted Trish in our book, so love what they're doing.
Oh, she's fantastic. So we love their data. We rely on it every day. We use it to have conversations with clients and prospects about sales and how it all functions. There's a really, really sad and kind of scary number in there. That the average rep is, and we're talking about SDRs, so their entire job is to have conversations with qualified buyers every single day. They're having 5.1 conversations on average. 5.1, which means if you're having 5 conversations, you've got to have a 20% conversion rate to meetings just to get a meeting a day. And if your entire job is that, boy, that's frustrating. And what are all the other non-selling things that you're doing? What are the things that are getting your way? How much research are you doing? How much time are you spending on that? That's where we talk about more conversations with qualified buyers. It's to think that these poor SDRs out there spending 8 hours a day having 5 good conversations and maybe converting 1 or 2 on their best day. I've been that guy. I've dealt with that as an individual contributor, and it's really challenging. I mean, I'd get up earlier and stay later and make more calls and send more emails than everybody else because I knew I had to hit my number. And that's one thing, like we're talking about for most reps is a dream that they can get all this technology and have all this process put in place, but they're not in charge of it. So for those individual contributors out there who are thinking about this and, well, how can this impact me? You know, what we recommend is to look at the things that you can control and one effort. And where do you direct that effort? I mean, if there's one message we could share for those people who have to sell every single day, it's focus on the things that are going to bring you closest to revenue, right? If your manager has 100 dials that you have to hit, but you know that you scheduled a meeting yesterday that's due today, go confirm the meeting first. Because you're most likely, you know, you're comped on qualified opportunities, very likely. And at the very least, it helps the company because they want a qualified opportunity that turns into a sale. I mean, nothing happens really until something's sold. Nobody really, you don't earn money as a company until something's actually sold and paid for. We would recommend, you know, look at the things that are closest to converting and spend most of your time focused on that, and then backfill with the additional effort. Don't start by thinking, well, I got to do 100 calls today, and then I'll try and confirm some appointments if I have time, because then you're just going to set up more appointments that won't hold. Does that make sense?
Yes. In fact, we use in the book the impact versus effort. And
there you go.
Have them actually, because sometimes some people are visual. So when they see that quadrant and they are able to prioritize tasks or activities based on that quadrant, it naturally puts it in the order that you were talking about, which is the things that are going to give us the highest impact first, and then working on down. It's almost like the old Stephen Covey time management, important but not urgent. It takes, it's sort of related to that, but we use it for activity organizing because of the fact that a lot of times during the day, reps get pulled in a myriad of different directions, and it's sometimes hard to focus. I mean, I get pulled in a million directions during a day. I have my block time because I am trained. I just believe in block time. So I do my whole day like that, but there are sometimes things happen that you get pulled out. Can you guys go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think from a rep's perspective, it's chasing that one, you know, that one lead that you found on LinkedIn. You're going to find all the contact information. You're jumping over to Gmail, send an email. It bounces. So you call them, you get told to call back after lunch. I mean, there's all these things that, like you're saying, time blocking is a fantastic methodology. But if you don't have the system in place for where you should be spending your time and how to use it most efficiently, I mean, it can drive you nuts. Even just blocking off time for prospecting, I could spend 2 hours trying to get a hold of, you know, five people. It could kill me.
Right. You guys mentioned earlier that you are building an engine, and the engine is fed with records. And you mentioned about the messaging piece, and also about you got to fill that thing with quality. Tell us a little bit about how you go about working with any type of client in readying the engine so that the fuel that's going in there is high octane rocket fuel, as opposed to, you know, a concoction you mix in your kitchen kind of thing.
Well, I think the difference between the analogy with the fuel here is that we can't get it right or perfect right off the bat. Right. We can certainly use best practices and take, you know, our very best stab at it. So we built a tool called the Message Builder that allows us to interview our clients, get all of the information that we need from them in order to build a complete campaign of messaging. And either they're running or we're running, it doesn't matter. The concept's the same, is we're going to iterate on that messaging. But if we're not, first of all, consistent, we can't iterate on anything because we're constantly iterating and we have no, you know, it's like a multivariate test. We're looking at too many things changing all at once.
Right.
And so what I would recommend is, you know, start with that consistent messaging. Even if it's bad messaging, you're better off than it one in every 10 conversations having or a great message even. And then the rest being kind of average. You can learn more over time by starting with a consistent message. So that's where we started. So let's say it's fuel that we funnel in there, and over time it gets higher and higher octane.
Right. Because, you know, my whole big thing is statistically relevant sampling. We want to make sure that we go in and just resist the desire to tweak. You know, that's the hardest thing.
Every 5 seconds. Everybody wants to tweak every 5 seconds. Absolutely.
Yeah. So well, resist the desire.
Maybe I should change what I said there.
What's that?
I was saying, you know, if that prospect was mean to me, I'm just dying to change my script, or, you know, that email didn't land very well, so I'm dying to change my template, that sort of thing.
Exactly. You can't do that. You got to really hit the, you know, you said everything's math related, or at least a lot of it is math related. So is the testing piece, especially when you're split testing. Mm-hmm. You want to make sure that that term statistically relevant. Now that can fluctuate based on your audience size and the actual segment that you're working on. But if you hold off, put your ego in your pocket, let the data help you decide what you should change next, and then score that, I think you're right. It definitely allows you to get going on higher quality, high revenue potential clients that will close at a higher rate. Tell us a little bit about the close rates. How does this, you know, I know we start off, we're limping along and we're iterating and we're testing and we're analyzing and we're iterating and we're designing. When we get to, you know, we're not quite running yet, but we're walking stage, is what you're doing affecting the close rates? And are the close rates growing because you're putting more quality in? Or where do you guys fit in that spectrum of closing the actual opportunities?
Yeah,
it's an interesting question.
It absolutely should
jump on again.
Play, yeah, it should absolutely play into the closing rates, right?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the companies that we work with, what's interesting is since the book that Rex and Ryan wrote is called Outbound Sales, No Fluff, our focus is outbound. So for companies that come to us, it might be the first time that they're seriously going to try outbound. Outbound, as we all know, opportunities can be a little different than inbound opportunities. If you have a lot of lead gen going on and you kind of maxed out the marketing in your space, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're not going on that hockey stick, we got to go outbound, it should absolutely affect the closing ratio if you're having the right conversations with the right prospect at the right time. I don't know if we don't really track exactly how it goes into affect the closing ratio, but I mean, if you're really working on your message the way that we subscribe at the top of the funnel, you're not going to be putting bad leads in, and mm-hmm. the efficiency of our systems is going to make sure that you're going to talk to everyone in your addressable market in a shorter amount of time and get the right message in front of them. Anything you want to add, Rex?
Yeah. Well, so we think about the formula for prospecting is, you know, the right target with the right message at the right time in the right channel, right? So it all starts with targeting. So of course, if we're going outbound, if we're focusing on the exact right buyer personas, and we know that we can solve a pain that they're most likely experiencing, which is the only thing they care about, is solving a problem for them.
Right.
You know, they don't care about the article we just wrote on Forbes or that we got featured on such and such, or our data is being used for, you know, this other cool thing. Nobody cares about the funding we receive. So if we know we can solve a problem for them, yeah, it definitely impacts the closing rate because we can identify that problem earlier. We're having the conversations around that. It's not about, you know, the ebook that they downloaded and trying to eventually get to the problem. I mean, if they don't think they have a problem we can solve, we're not earning the next conversation. So it definitely impacts those closing rates. Now, of course, with outbound, it's not the same kind of timing signal that it is with inbound. Where inbound, you know, if you get a qualified opportunity, it's likely that they are looking for a solution today, or they're investigating a solution for the future. With outbound, they might take a meeting because they're experiencing the problem, but they're not ready to buy because, well, this isn't something that's on our radar for this quarter. We've got to, you know, slate it for next quarter. But imagine if you could talk to everyone in your target demographic, everyone you're trying to sell to today, who's an ideal buyer, just the perfect buyer, and they could tell you when they're going to be ready to buy. That's better than an inbound lead because you've confirmed timing from them telling you, from you actually seeing what their priorities are today. So it definitely impacts closing rates. You know, we couldn't say broadly, hey, it's an X percent increase. It definitely depends on the market, the targeting, and all those good things. But that's how we look at it.
Yeah, I know. I think because of the fact that we're targeting, so we're not casting that wide net. Mm-hmm. We are focused and narrow. So narrow, narrow, narrow as much as possible. By definition, if we're targeting the right people, which the assumption is we are with outbound, then our close mm-hmm. rates will be higher because there's more quality going through. The other thing to note is the handoff between the business development team and the account executive should be higher quality, and those conversion rates should be 90% or more. For every 10 we mm-hmm. hand off, one may come back floating over because we've done mm-hmm. such a great job in the disqualification process. We've worked through who the ideal folks are. We know the stakeholders. We've mapped through their pain points. We've aligned the product and the buying scenario with each. We know their levels of awareness. All that has to happen for the outbound to work properly. And once we mm-hmm. get it to opportunity stage, those are going to close at a higher rate, and they're also going to convert to opportunity. So forecasting is more accurate as the result of all the work that we do preparing to get the right leads in the engine to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us now, the book, Outbound Sales, No Fluff, the second portion of it says, written by two millennials who have actually sold something this decade. Why did you put that in there?
Yeah, because we're a little bit cheeky. No, I think because for young folks, so, you know, this is where only a couple of millennials have really broken through in terms of consulting or expertise of people that actually respect what they have to say. Like Morgan Ingram is a young guy who's been very successful in putting his name out there, for example. Ryan and I wanted to emphasize, like, look, we may be what everyone terms a millennial, but that doesn't mean that we haven't done something worth listening to our thoughts on, right? It, okay. It gives, while we may not have the credibility of an enterprise seller who's been doing this for 30 years, we've sold something. We know what buying looks like today. We know what selling looks like today because things have changed over the last 30 years. So a book that was relevant 30 years ago, maybe not so much today because of the specifics that they get into. So we were trying to make the statement, look, it's relevant. It's worth reading. Now, the emphasis is no fluff, and we get some feedback from people that it's just way too short. But the fact is, most people don't read the books they buy. Most people don't take any action on any of the books they read. So our goal here was just to say, look, it's something worth taking a look at. And of course, it's a little controversial because we're in a space. If you're in sales consulting, obviously, we're not competing necessarily, but we're playing in the big leagues with people who have been doing this for, you know, dozens of years and whom we respect, by the way. That was the other thing. We didn't really want to call anyone out because at the end of the book, you'll see we have thought leader after thought leader who, of course, have maybe 30, 40 years our senior who are experts in their space, who we trust and have learned so much from. The idea is really, look, don't discount us just because we've got young faces. That's not something that we'd expect.
Okay, because you know what I thought? I thought it meant here we hear a lot of chatter about millennials not knowing how to sell. They're not comfortable with the phone. They're not comfortable
millennials
with
dial.
Right. Oh, and here you two, that's the way I looked at it. I looked at it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Here we are, guys. We know how to do this. We've cracked the code and we're millennials. That's the way I looked
at it. Yeah, Ryan and I used to use the, I think we used the hashtag millennials. Millennials who dial on LinkedIn for a long time because son of a gun, everybody's, so it was so funny. I got somebody who emailed me from reading the book, and I think they forgot the subtitle included the word millennials in it because he emailed me and said, hey, I've got a whole team of millennials and they won't call, you know, these darn millennials. So I get on a call with him, having a conversation. I don't think he realizes how young I am. And he's just digging into millennials. And, you know, I give him some advice and I'm friendly with him, but the business wasn't going to happen there because the fact is it's, you can't blame it on their age. You can't blame it on a bracket of any. It has to do with coaching and learning. And are they the right kind of person anyway? I know 50-year-olds who won't dial. Sure. Right. It doesn't really matter our age. So yeah, I think definitely in part we wanted to say, look, yeah, we make calls and we love it.
Right, right. So everyone listening, the website is thesalesdevelopers.com. I'll put all the links to the book, to the site. And then Kevin and Rex, if there's anything you want to pop over for me to add to the page, feel free to do that.
Absolutely.
But it's really about preparing and understanding what to feed these engines. And if you're in the position where your like hands are tied of what to get with the stack, there is, or you can't purchase, like some of my folks are, have to go through years of, you know, getting IT to approve things still in this day and age. There's another option here that allows you to supplement your existing sales team with the actual heavy duty engine in place that I think is great. I love the idea of supplemental because sometimes I have clients, for example, who have a rush of time where they need to ramp up for an extended period of time. And then when it's over, they go back to their core group. So that's another way you can utilize these services is an on-demand type thing over a period of time. I'm sure you have a multi-month slash, you know, less than a year contract or whatever. But that's another way to look at this is that you need at some time when you're pushing new products or you've got a window of opportunity, if there's a compliance change where you want to maximize the market by getting out there ahead of everybody else, these are great systems for that. And if you can't put that stack into place, I mean, all the ones you've mentioned, I think are very helpful once you understand that sales conversation canvas of how you're going to start that dialogue, how many touches you're going to have, what types of touches you're going to have. So that's great. Really like what you guys are doing. And thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Well, we appreciate it. And, you know, the fun thing is, we're not always selling our services just because we always love talking about sales. So if anybody reaches out to us, we're always happy to point them in the right direction, share with them thoughts we've got, or people that we respect who have expertise in a certain field. So don't hesitate to reach out if it's something not directly relating to buying our services. We don't mind. We love it.
Yeah, no, it's all about helping our community, and we're all about
Absolutely.
That. So definitely. Well, thanks a lot, you guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.